Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today, we have finished Jurassic Park, the book, and we've also watched the movie.
And the film.
The film, as we call it. Mm-hmm. So I think we're gonna talk a little bit about both. I think we're gonna focus, unsurprisingly, mostly on the book, and then maybe talk movie a little bit more at the end.
Yeah.
But no warm up today because we've got a lot to cover.
Yes, we do. Luke, I want to get us started with Malcolm again.
Okay.
We're coming in hot with Malcolm. Malcolm is still annoying in this
section.
Dude,
I have so many notes on Malcolm.
Okay. I want to get us started with one big thing with Malcolm, and then we can get into some more of the nitty-gritty with him, because he is just kind of insufferable. But
yeah,
he has this big rant about science and scientists. Yes. And how they're just like raping the natural world and destroying everything. And he's like so angry about it. I think at one point he asks what the dig sites look like when they're done. And they're like, well, it looks like we dug up a bunch of stuff. And he's like, see, you guys are just fucking everything up.
Right.
I honestly feel like he is kind of a child. Like, he just wants everybody to be angry at him. He wants to be contrarian, because like, digging a hole in the ground, who cares? Like, if I go out in the desert and then I dig a hole in the ground, what does that matter? Like, what people also go around and like build sculptures and do like we change things. What is the problem there? Why is your metric everything has to stay the same, otherwise it's bad?
Right.
And I feel, too, like a lot of his criticisms were just a rant against capitalism, not like scientific discovery.
Yes.
It was like a rant against like exploitation of the natural world and extraction without like a thought for like long-term sustainability. And that's like not science, my guy.
It kind of, so his whole anti-science thing makes no sense. Like, almost none of it makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to come in here and be like, okay, Luke and Dan, we're scientists.
Yeah, we're a little biased. But then again, he's a fucking mathematician. So stop chomping on our flavor.
Because so I wanted to be able to come out here and be like, this is stupid because of this like perspective that you and I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we can do that because his critique of science isn't good enough. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, this doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, I can't rebut you from the science perspective. I have to rebut you from just like a normal person thinking about things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do, I want to do one specific.
Please.
He wants to talk about how scientists are bad because they've accumulated all this power.
Oh my God. Yeah.
With no effort. And his like, he's like, yeah, you can just like, you can start early, you can get really good at science early or something, which is unlike, if you think about like a kung fu master, they have a lot of power over being able to physically harm people, but like...
But it takes training for them to learn how to do that.
Right, and over the course of their training, they will have like learned that they shouldn't use violence.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, so like we can just say things? I guess I can just make up stuff. That's fun. You're telling me people that have learned to fight are the most emotionally mature people in the world? Is that what I'm hearing?
His analogy doesn't make sense for so many reasons, because And I don't know if Michael wasn't brave enough to say this or if Malcolm is just an idiot, but it's not the scientists. Again, it's not the scientists that don't have the training. All of these people have PhDs. That means they spent so much time training how to do this stuff. So much. Like,
right.
The scientists, and to expect them to come up with it whole cloth, like from scratch, is absurd for anything. The Kung Fu guy didn't invent Kung Fu. He learned about it from people who developed those moves and techniques over hundreds of years. Okay?
Right.
Like, to say that it's a bad thing to stand on the shoulders of giants and continue that work is so nonsensical. What his real critique is critiquing the capitalists who are taking the scientific work without any understanding of it and applying it in ways that are harmful. Like,
right.
That's what he's not critiquing the scientists, because they are just like the Kung Fu master who have spent decades learning how to do their craft. Okay? They do have an understanding of, like, the horrors that they're doing. They do have an understanding of, like, the responsibility. Your critique is the capitalist, which the analogy here, Luke, is somebody going out and purchasing a gun and shooting right. someone. Right?
Right.
That's the analogy. The analogy is somebody just using money to get this horrible power to use against someone else.
Yeah.
But Malcolm wants to talk about scientists for some reason.
Again, this is the kind of thing where, like, I'm getting frustrated by it. And I want, like, I feel like I'm not being defensive about this as a scientist.
We're not being defensive, guys.
I'm just, like, annoyed at how bad the critique is. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, I'm all here for a good, well-thought-out critique of science. Yes. There's plenty.
And, Luke, okay, you're right, and it feels like such a missed opportunity in this book, because I think an excellent critique of science, especially established sciences, are that we rely, like, too much on our given, like, understandings of models for how the world works, right? Like, we are so committed to these paradigms of, like, as, you know, as a chemist, paradigm of, like, atoms and molecules and things like that, where I'm always looking for that as the solution. And it's, if that wasn't the solution, I'd have a really, really hard time, like, solving problems that are sort of outside that scope. Or the problem of, like, being in the real world and things behaving differently, which he does get into a little bit, which I'm like, yeah, that's a good critique of, like, a lot of stuff works in the lab, and when you actually do it in the real world, it's much, much more complicated.
Right. But that's right. More of a critique of academia.
Correct. Malcolm, and the thing about it which is crazy, Luke, is that now, I wouldn't say that Michael Crichton is necessarily a scientist, but he has an MD. Like, he has a scientific degree.
So, okay, before we go farther, did you do some reading up on Michael Crichton?
I did. Did you? Okay. Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Michael.
And I think that, like,
we should say Michael Crichton at the end of his life was a climate change denier. Yeah. And a very vocal one who, like, testified to Congress about how the data's overblown and this is really not that big a deal, guys.
Right. So here's the problem. I fear that Malcolm is kind of a stand-in for Michael.
I think you're right, Luke.
Because if you look at... I haven't read that many of his other books. I was actually looking through his... He has, like, a lot of very classic books.
He does.
Stories and movies.
He does.
But a theme of it is, like, science is bad.
I think a critique of science, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate based on this critique that we have witnessed.
Right, because it's like, okay, you didn't... This is bad.
This does not feel like a good critique, guys.
Yeah.
It feels like you have a fundamental misunderstanding of what the whole operation is, actually.
And also just, as you mentioned, like, the cri- the actual things that he's pointing out are not really with science.
Right.
Like, science is a con... He's trying to... He's saying science, like, the concept of science.
Yes. Yes.
Like, he never is specifying an institution or, like, a category of institutions, I guess.
Right.
So he's saying, like, science, which at its barest is just, like, trying to understand the world, right?
Right. It's like and a it's systematic like, well, you've been process. Doing
that. This is not a new thing, really. So, like, it would make much more sense if you were, like... I think he could be a lot more pointed of being... Of doing the kind of... I don't even... It's more like, yeah, profit-oriented stuff. But that's not science. That's, like, capitalism.
Right.
But also just kind of human nature.
Right. And I think, too, like... I mean, even trying to take him at what he said, like even trying to give him some value of like, yeah, I guess there are like a lot of analysis techniques are destructive, right? Like a lot of our modern analytical techniques for understanding the world are destructive based on like, you know, digging stuff up and that kind of stuff. But there's also a lot of science that is not destructive and is creative and is like sustaining and like, or... You can talk about astronomy. Astronomy? You're just looking at shit. How is that rape of the natural world, guy?
Right.
Like, I get you built a telescope somewhere. Are we not allowed to do any... Are we not allowed to do anything, Malcolm? Again, just coming back to, like, what are we allowed to do in your mind, Malcolm?
I don't... The rape of the natural world thing is just like, what are you talking about, man?
He's such an edgelord that I'm like, do you even do math? Like, is this really even a... Who is
No, he doesn't, Dan. He's never done math. What are you... He's doing this chaos theory thing, and it's like, that's not... You're not doing anything. Throughout this book, Malcolm is like, I don't even have to do the math. I just know it's going to go wrong. And it's like, I don't even think you can do the math because there's not any math to do that you're talking about.
Who you're is like, this guy?
You're like highlighting conceptual. You're the big thing is like things are complicated. It's like, yeah, man, we know that.
Was this Luke? Was this all it took in the 90s? Was this all it took?
I don't know. Okay, I have a few more things to rant about Malcolm though.
Let's go.
Not quite the same. Yeah, but let's just get all of our Malcolm qualms out of the way.
I think we need to.
I forget when this is, but at some point he is making the classic point that some people make these days as well, that like our ancestors like 30,000 years ago, like hunter gatherers, had like more relaxing lives than we do.
Yeah.
And first of all, I want to point out, I think that he's doing this in a critique against science again. This is not a critique against science. It's a critique against like current. It's just sci. I don't even know. But it's not true. Okay.
Say more, Luke.
It's not true that we have worse lives than people 30,000 years ago.
Right. Did they have Xbox 30,000 years ago? I don't think
they
so.
They didn't even have Xbox, folks. Let me tell you something. You could go and be a gatherer.
Yeah.
Right now.
You can do it today.
And you could correctly, like, you could work for a few hours, a couple hours a day to feed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally true.
Doable.
And especially in today's worlds where you can just, like, you know, panhandle or, like, search for food in, like, random places.
You could just, right? You could just make a YouTube channel that's you literally doing this and probably support yourself.
Right. You don't do that because that's terrible, okay?
Correct. Yeah. Because you want to live in an apartment with like central heating and air and have like a nice cold lemonade in the summer from your refrigerator. And
right.
Yeah. And like,
it's
and not die of stupid cholera.
Like, yeah. Like, I agree that I don't love working at my job. I would rather do something else, but I prefer it over being a gatherer.
Right, like living in a cave.
Yeah.
And like dying at age 35.
Right.
Or just being in pain for a lot of your life because you like got an injury once that never got got medical attention. Yeah.
I would much prefer my current life than to like sit around in a cave for most of the day.
Yeah.
Complaining because like my ankle hurts.
It'd be the knees. It'd be Luke's knees, unfortunately.
Knees for sure. I already do that actually. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Moving on from that point. Let me do another rant about one of Malcolm's points. This one is later on.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of the book when Hammond, I think, is like talking about how he was worried that they were going to like destroy the Earth, mm-hmm. right? And Malcolm's like, you idiot. You absolute buffoon. Even if you did something that completely destroyed all life on the surface of Earth, after like after several hundreds of years, like life would come back.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
So you idiot, how dare you?
You idiot, this hubris you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Earth can go on be like without us. It's like, yeah, man. Like I wasn't talking about like literally the Earth exploding. Like if I end all life on Earth, that's what I'm talking about. I've functionally destroyed the planet from my perspective. Like that's bad. I'm not like, oh, it's so good. In reality, like the Earth can go on without me.
Right.
Like it's a short. You're just being an asshole.
It's a shorthand. You're being pedantic, Malcolm. Like I don't mean I'm going to literally destroy the planet. I mean I'm going to make the planet such a horrendous place for people to live that it's going to dramatically change it from how it is currently.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I get that the world will survive. I am not like, that's not the bar that I'm talking about.
Especially when we're thinking about the like danger of dinosaurs getting out, right? Like the thing they're talking about is if the dinosaurs reach land, right?
Yeah. He's like, he was worried about the dinosaurs like reaching land and like, now they're like a big threat to humanity.
Right. Like clearly he's not talking about ending all life on Earth. Like he's not talking about the dinos.
Permanently.
Yeah. He's not talking about the dinosaurs killing every single living creature and plant and bacteria and then killing themselves, thus ending life on Earth. Like that's not what he's talking about, guy.
Right.
Malcolm. I'm glad he's dead.
Me too. We hate Malcolm. We hate Malcolm, who I firmly believe is a stand-in for the author.
No.
Which is Rob.
Who is also dead. But
yes.
I won't say that I'm glad he's dead. But I think, you know, just like Malcolm, I think the author at the end of his life was talking some bullshit that wasn't helping us. Michael,
come on. Okay, do you have anything more on Malcolm before
we
move on?
I gotta move on from Malcolm.
Okay.
Luke, I have an important question for you.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much more delicious do you think a human is than a dinosaur? Like what, 10 being like actually that was a bad question. How many more times delicious do you think a human is than a dinosaur?
Like twice? Honestly, I gotta feel like they're probably like they can't be that different.
Okay.
I would think.
Dino
from
meat,
from
human,
yeah.
Meat. I mean, humans close analogs from what I hear is pig, so probably kind of like a pork. Dinos, obviously, they're like chicken.
Obviously, birds. Yeah. Ooh, actually, this is a good question because are dinos so that lean?
Ooh, that is a good question, actually.
I feel like they can't be that lean.
As chicken. I think it depends the dino. It depends on the dino.
Yeah.
But let's say like one of the big plodding like Stegosaurus or Triceratops.
Oh, those guys are probably, I think they're on par with humans.
Okay.
In terms of tastiness.
Then, Luke, what is this T-Rex's problem?
Yes, we need to talk about
what,
this.
What, buddy, there's food everywhere. There is so much food everywhere. And it's food that you can identify as distinctly your food.
Right.
Why are you following these people around?
Right. At a certain point, he's just being an asshole.
Yes, he's like following them down the river as they're in their raft. There's food everywhere. There's like all kinds of dinos running around on either right. side of the river. Why?
Yeah, he also like has kind of already eaten at this point, right?
Many times.
Yeah.
Did he just develop a taste? You know?
Mm.
He got one taste of human and was like, actually, that shit slaps.
Could be. Yes. I don't know. I mean, because the raptors I kind of get, because as we know, they're evil inherently.
Yes, they're evil. Raptors are. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Raptors are just murder birds, I guess. The T-Rex is more interesting because it does feel like it would just be trying to feed.
Here's the other thing that's crazy about it, Luke. T-Rex has to eat so much, yeah. Right? It's big. It's a giant animal. And it evolved at a time when there were other giant animals around.
Right.
Why is it spending so much effort for like an appetizer? It's chasing around like the last three cubes of cheese on a cheese board as it's like actively starving to death, surrounded by like a Golden Corral buffet. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Like, quit the charcuterie, dude. It's that part of the meal is over and it's running away from you. It's in the delivery person's car and they're headed back to whatever you get delivery charcuterie from.
This is falling apart, but yes, I agree. A better example would be the waiter has taken away the first course. It has now dropped your big steak on your table and you're trying to follow the waiter, right?
Right, but the waiter's on like roller skates and it's, yeah. And your whole table and every other table around you are covered in steak. Just do that. Just eat that.
I was honestly wondering, and I don't think this works, but if it has like a prey drive kind of thing going on where it likes to chase.
Oh, okay.
You know?
You're saying no other dinosaurs will run from the T-Rex? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
it's not okay. A great theory. I'll give you that.
All right, Luke, I got a theory for you.
Okay.
Dr. Wu was talking about they need to update some versions.
Yes.
Maybe this version had a hunger for people. And they were like, we didn't expect this to show up in the animal's behavior. But it turns out this T-Rex is crazy about human meat. We didn't put it in there. I promise we didn't put it in there. It just, you know, it's complicated. And that came out.
Something in the genetic code made it have a really like attraction to eating people more so than the alternatives.
Yeah, a hunger for human meat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a point there where I think it's Hammond. I forget if this is in the book or the movie, honestly, where he's saying that the where they went wrong was like Wu. Or one of the ways was Wu trying to improve the dinosaurs instead of just recreating nature.
Yeah, this is in the book. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Maybe Dr. Wu was like, well, we're trying to, like, it's the T-Rex exhibit, right? Like, that's scary.
Okay.
So we're maximizing for scary, right?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
He's like, it's not going to be a cool exhibit if the T-Rex is just sitting there, right? We want the T-Rex banging its head against the fences, scaring everybody.
We want these T-Rex screaming for a person to come over and get chomped.
That's exciting, right?
That is really exciting too. And it solves the problem, Luke, of getting the T-Rex to like come and perform for the exhibit. Is if the T-Rex are just naturally horny to eat people, as soon as they get a scent of you, they're coming by.
As soon as this tour starts and you get within smelling vicinity of the T-Rex like lair area.
Yep.
That thing is throwing itself at the fences. And everybody's loving it. Everybody's howling because they're like, whoo boy, this is a high quality entertainment.
Right. Right. That's what you need. Okay, Luke. This is for sure it. Yeah. Dr. Wu really shouldn't have put that Hannibal DNA in there though.
Right.
Turned out it wasn't. Maybe this is what Malcolm was talking about, you know?
Yeah.
This is science.
It's more of just a pointed critique of a specific character.
Right. Exactly. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here for that. Because the T-Rex is a menace this whole time.
Mm.
Or maybe he just like was buddies with the other dinosaurs.
Oh, it would have been rude.
He's like, listen, I gotta eat some of you just because I'm kind of hungry.
Right.
We're all trying to get out of here, right?
Right. Ooh. Oh, Luke. They're all like cellmates in a big prison.
Yeah.
And some of the guards just happen to slip in. We all know who we're trying to get old Rexy to eat.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. Right. Maybe the other dinosaurs are helping him too. They're like, they're over here. Hey.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot of options there, then. I appreciate that we figured out some options for what the T-Rex is up to.
Yeah, yeah. T-Rex is kind of smarter than I thought, by the way.
Well, Luke,
the part where the T-Rex goes and like hangs out at the bottom of the waterfall. Come on, man.
Luke, that's the thing about dinos is you can look at their bones, but it doesn't really tell you a single thing about how they behave. And Michael can make him do whatever he wants.
That's true. That's right.
So, pretty smart and also kind of evil.
Kind of evil. Got a hankering for human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't we all, Dan? Don't we all?
What? What?
Moving on. So, why, Dan, why we got to make Lex the idiot every time?
Yeah. Yeah,
give Timmy his fair share of messing up.
Luke, but she's a girl?
I was going to say, this is like...
Yeah.
I have to think that this is all just being like, girls are stupid, so...
Yeah, I know. This is putting up a red flag for me as well.
Yeah.
Because Lex has like no redeeming things, from what I can tell. Like, it's Timmy doing it all. Timmy...
Well, it's funny because Lex has no... is, like, all negative.
Yeah.
And Timmy is, like, this super child.
Yes.
Who's perfect in every way.
Correct. Correct. yeah. And it's... It does feel strange to me as well, because the main thing that Lex keeps doing is saying how hungry she is.
Yeah.
At moments that are so inopportune for her to be like complaining about how hungry she is.
Right.
Like, hi, I get that you're hungry. See that dino over there that's thinking about eating us? It's also hungry, and it would love to hear you keep saying that to call it over.
Right.
Because she is younger. So in the book, she's younger than Tim.
Okay, I was trying to remember because I got... So we should say they kind of flip it in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I think Torridon talks about this on our Discord. They flip it in the movie, although I think they make it a little more even. Like, Lex is definitely the competent one for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But... Timmy is at least kind of likable, and yes. I think Lex messes up every now and then, so it's more even.
Right, but book-wise, yeah, Lex is just a silly girl.
Yeah. The movie, they were like, all right, this is insane. We got to...
Which we'll get to.
We're going
to
dial back.
We're
going to
talk about the movie later. But yes.
Okay.
Big difference.
Okay,
here.
let's put a plug in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So one of the big crises that's going on while this is happening, that's kind of propelling Grant and the kids forward to get back to the visitor center, is the fact that they have to stop this boat from getting on shore.
Yeah.
And they talk about it like it is, would be one of the like worst things to happen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We find out they like call the boat back. They tell them what's going on. They find the velociraptors. I think there were like three of them on the boat. Maybe four. But, Luke, the point I want to make here is that this would not be a problem.
Okay.
So the boat docks, four velociraptors get off the boat, and let's be generous here, two males, two females.
Sure.
That population would die out in like three generations. The level of inbreeding, like this population is functionally extinct. Like, I get that they would be dangerous, but that also means there would be a concerted effort for people to, like, hunt them down and kill them.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, they would die off on their own because there is no genetic diversity in this population of four velociraptors.
Right.
This is not a problem that we really need to even worry that much about.
Yeah, I mean, it is a problem in the, like, short term. These things are dangerous, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's not, like, that crazy. I don't know. I mean, it is kind of, like, I don't know. I see your point, but it is still bad for them to get off. Right.
Look, I agree with you. It's bad. It becomes a big problem.
Yeah.
But it's not. Listen, Luke, there are way bigger problems that we have to deal with today that feel like they had less like people being worried about them.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like one oil spill is like 10 times worse than four velociraptors getting off.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, and that happens like once every 10 years or so. So like what are we worried about here with this, really?
Sure. Yeah.
And that's also being generous in the sense that they're like two males and two females. But like,
right.
If there's one female or three, like it's fine. it's not really going to be that big a deal.
Right.
And also, they're entering a world that they have no understanding of. So many of those are going to just die immediately when they get eaten by, like, a puma or, like, another, like, a crocodile or, like, some other animal.
Right. Also, and this is jumping forward a little bit.
Yeah.
But they have this lysine deficiency thing.
Yep.
And I get that they kind of solve it in a way at the end here that we can talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
But before you hear about that, it's like, it's kind of fine. They can only survive for like 12 hours.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, get back and warn them, right? But like,
yeah.
Kind of save yourself mostly.
Right. Right.
Yeah. This is that's a Grant thing, right? That Grant's trying to get back.
Yeah, Grant's trying to get back with the kids to fix this boat problem.
I also think that Grant has a bit of a weird fixation on counting the eggs at the end.
Yeah, we do need to talk about this. Mm-hmm.
So he's like, they kind of like bring everything back online and everything's in a somewhat stable position. Right.
Yeah, we should mention that, like, the process of bringing everything back online is horrific. So, like, there are velociraptors everywhere. They are killing people left and right. They are, like, super efficient, evil killing machines. And Grant happens to kill three of them with his, like, poison egg trick.
Yeah.
And then they get everything back online. But they're still, like, there's still animals are loose in the park. It's just that they've sort of locked down their local, like, the visitor center and the lodge area, I think.
Right. They've, like, brought power back online.
Yeah.
And I
think the military is coming.
The military is almost there.
Yeah.
So, like, they're kind of safe.
Yes.
And can just kind of wait it out.
Yes.
And...
and then Grant... Because I think you're right, because the velociraptors are still out. They do a count and they're like, oh yeah, they're hunting. Like, this is turning into a real ecosystem. They're like not really contained anymore. And Grant's like, well, time for us to go count eggs. And it's like, maybe I could see Grant doing it because he killed three of them and feels like he's fucking Superman and is like the raptor slayer.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, I'm like, no. No, I'm not going to do that.
Well, so, okay, let's work through the logic here for a second. So he's, the military's coming,
mm-hmm.
and they're just going to, like, kill everything.
Yeah.
Kill all the dinosaurs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, in a not careful way. They're just going to wreck this island.
They're going to, like, bomb the island, yeah.
Yeah. And that's not even really the qualm.
Mm-hmm.
His issue is he's like, well, we don't know. From my understanding, he's like, we don't actually know how many velociraptors there are. So we need to do a count to make sure we get them all, I guess.
That is what I think his explanation is. Yeah.
And to do that, we need to right now.
Yep.
Like three of us go look for the nest.
Yeah.
And the lawyer guy, who has been, like, kind of fine, actually.
Very reasonable.
Very reasonable, kind of this whole time, is like, no, I don't want to do that. And they make him go. Sorry, this is, like, almost murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
And okay. First of all, they go and, like, count one nest's eggs. Where they're kind of vibing it out. It's like, I think there's like 38 in there. eggs.
And also a bunch of velociraptors there, and they're just kind of now chill.
Right.
Now, hey, these velociraptors are actually chill, and we actually don't need to be freaking out about the fact that if they see us at any point, they're going to immediately eviscerate us brutally.
Right. Also, everyone's, again, I feel like maybe I'm coming back to this too much. Everyone's super mean to the lawyer guy.
Yep.
During this. They, like, slide into this hole going down into a nest of velociraptors. And he's like, I don't really want to do that. And they, like, shove him into it.
They're like, you caused this to happen. He's like, we only own 5%. He's like, that's enough.
This guy's been the most reasonable this whole time.
Especially Luke. Why is he there?
Like, on the island at all?
Yes.
Or
why did he even come to the island?
Yeah.
Because he was concerned with the safety of his investment. He was doing the thing of, hey, I own part of this company. Let me inspect it to see if it's safe.
Right.
Oh, it's not safe. So we're shutting it down. That's why he was there. And now you're like feet first into the velociraptor pit, you pig.
Right. So that I can get a rough estimate on how many eggs hatched.
In this nest.
In this nest. My man. Also, if you don't, first of all, your count is not accurate. Okay.
Correct.
But also, if you don't do the count, they like bomb the island.
Yeah.
And let's say they miss a couple. What happens next? They just die anyway.
Right.
Of starvation. Right?
Right.
There's not an equilibrium of prey and predator that has developed over the course of the last like week here.
Right. You can effectively quarantine this place. And
Grant's like, I just want to see the nest, guys. I want to see it.
I mean, that's for sure it.
Yeah.
Grant wants to have a little like rave with a bunch of velociraptors.
Yeah. This phenomenon that they observe in the velociraptor nest of them kind of lining up.
Yeah.
Did you follow it? How they're like migrating like birds?
I mean, I followed the explanation at the end that was like, oh, they're just looking in the direction that they are trying to migrate to. I guess. Actually, now that you mention this, no. I have no idea what they were talking about.
Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's some kind of like instinctive migration thing that birds do. I know that birds fly in like V's when they're migrating, or when it's like a group of them, but that's like a wind resistance kind of thing, right?
Well, also, what was the deal with the boat? Like, why was the boat related? Because what they said was there would be the young ones would hear a boat, they would make a call, everybody would like go out and look at it.
Yeah.
Did they know it was a boat? Were they like, oh, we got to get on that boat? Guys, how are we going to get on that boat?
Listen, the velociraptors are so smart, Dan.
Maybe I'm underestimating how smart they are, and them getting off the boat would actually be a horrible thing because they'd get the nuclear launch codes.
There's a hint kind of earlier that the velociraptors have like figured out what the motion detectors are. It's like, no, they have not. What are you talking about? How could they?
Yeah, Luke. Well, you know, if that asteroid hadn't have come, they would be running the world right now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, I have like two kind of last notes.
Yeah. Take us to your last notes, Luke.
So, for one thing, kind of a lame explanation for how they get beyond the lysine.
Yeah, I agreed with this. It's like they just ate a bunch of stuff with lysine in it.
Dan, these velociraptors, again, so smart.
Right.
There's a velociraptor doctor in the group who's like, damn, we all got this lysine dependency.
They've got a book of local native flora and fauna and are like, oh, these have high lysine. Let's go for these.
As we all know, we got it's kind of like a diagnosis. It's like we all just need a heavy. Also, sorry, Grant is like hearing someone's like, oh, they just we've seen them.
Yeah,
eat, like they're eating all of these crops, and Grant is like, oh, those are so heavy in lysine.
Classically high in lysine crops.
No, who knows that? Also, how high could it be?
It's a good question. It's a good question, Luke.
Oh, man. Okay, the other thing is I want to come back to the idea that we're giving up on Jurassic Park because I don't think we have to, Dan.
Absolutely not.
I have a simple solution.
Yeah.
Let's skip the evil ones.
Yeah, don't make the evil ones, guys.
We'll make the cool ones. Obviously, okay, come on, folks. I get that, as we talked about earlier, people will go nuts for the T-Rex being scary.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. However, you can... Other dinosaurs are pretty sweet. Give me Triceratops all day, every day.
Right.
I'm going.
And then if the fences break down, you don't have to worry about them like opening the door and eating you alive.
You can like hang out with them.
Yeah, you just put a saddle on one and ride it to battle. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Just do the cool ones. Just do the chill ones.
Just do the girl ones, guys. You don't have to do the boy ones.
Right. Right.
Do the girl ones. And, like, I get at the beginning when they didn't know what was going to come out, when they started making it, they were like, what's this one going to be? Let's find out. Like, that's fine. But just don't make any of the scary ones.
Right. And, or even just like after a couple of tries, the velociraptors are evil and can escape at will. Let's not do velociraptors anymore.
Yeah, not.
Right? We can. That's an option, right? We can call it a day on the velociraptors, yeah?
Yep. Yep. Sounds good. Sounds good to me, Luke.
It's fixed it.
I think totally fixed it to the point where whoever buys this company is still going to make a fortune.
Yeah.
Like, so valuable, guys.
Very much so.
And also you've developed...
Give me these big boys.
You've too. Also developed a process for bringing extinct animals back to life. Think of the possibilities, guys.
Yeah.
So many. Yeah.
Also, we talked about it a while ago, but dino steak?
Could be good.
Could be good.
Give it a try.
Okay, do you have anything more on the book, or do you want to talk movie now?
Let's talk movie, Luke.
Okay.
I the first thing I do want to talk about with the movie is people use this movie as a reference for what like good CGI was.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't bad CGI, but the CGI parts, I think the reason people conflate it with good CGI is there's a lot of practical effects of dinosaurs, which do look really good.
Yeah. How much of this was CGI versus...
So the big CGI scenes, the first time they see a dinosaur, the like Brachiosaurus, the big tall one.
Yes.
That one is CGI, and it doesn't look great. Like, it looks okay.
No, that's what I agree.
It looks okay, but it's not an example of like CGI that has passed the test of time. Like, it's CGI that's like, oh, this looks like 90s CGI. It's not like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings where you're like, holy shit, this thing looks amazing.
Right.
And that was 20 years ago. But I think part of the reason is like the practical effects are, really good. And so you sort of forget there.
The T-Rex?
Yeah.
Looks great.
The T-Rex does look great. Yes.
Phenomenal.
Yes. And the Velociraptors look pretty good too.
The Velociraptors look pretty good. The T-Rex looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
The Triceratops looks good.
Mm-hmm.
The big boy that's eating out of the tree with them looks very funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a head.
Yep. Head on a stick is what it is.
Head on a stick, very clearly. Which I appreciated. I was into.
Yeah.
Overall, like I was very impressed with the T-Rex, honestly.
Yeah. I gotta say, Luke, I think this movie holds up so well.
I think the movie holds up pretty well. Yes, I agree.
What do we think about... Okay, so there's a lot of comparison here with the book and the movie that I do want to get into. But I think... Like, I'm trying to think if there are components of the movie that are not immediately comparable to the book that I want to talk about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let me just say this.
Yeah.
It's wild how many classic or iconic scenes Jeff Goldblum has in this.
Yes.
But like lines that have just turned out to be very iconic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know why they have been, but it's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the way to do this is to just talk about it in comparison with the movie or with the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can we do a couple iconic scenes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Or like, so that have kind of like turned into memes.
Yeah.
At this point, there's a lot of Jeff Goldblum things. There's the Life Finds a Way.
Mm-hmm.
There's the I don't know why this is one where he does the, well, like, well, there it is or something.
Yes.
The funniest one to me is the one that he's like after he's injured.
Oh my god.
He's like shirtless.
Yes.
Like laying down in a really weird way.
He's in a playgirl pose, like, and he's not saying a damn thing. He's just watching the discussion in the control room, shirt fully exposed. His nips are fully out.
Right.
What?
He doesn't need to be for this scene, but he is.
Yeah, that was a choice. That was a choice that Jeff had to have made. Jeff had to be like, I gotta have the nips out for this.
Jeff was like, listen, you guys gotta zoom in on me for... I don't have any lines, I know, in this scene, but show my chest, all right?
It's gonna matter. Trust me. It's gonna make the scene.
People are gonna love it. There's also the... when they first see the dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
and they take the sunglasses off,
yes.
and stand up in the car, that's classic.
Classic scene. Yeah. That's a classic scene. I also think, okay, so they made a lot of changes to the book. Mm-hmm. One of them that we've talked about before is making Lex actually have some value here.
Yeah.
And I think they did a great job with that, where Lex did computers and was able to climb good, but was scared of the dinosaurs a lot because she didn't know much about them and got the ick a little bit from some of them.
Yeah. And she turned on the flashlight when the T-Rex was
turned on the flashlight. Come on, you gotta know that's not gonna be a good idea. Timmy, on the other hand, kind of a wimp. But
yeah,
knew a ton about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So we liked that.
We balanced it.
It was nice to have the balance. It felt like the movie was obviously much more from Grant's perspective than either of the kids. Whereas the book gave you Timmy's perspective a lot of the time while he was doing stuff.
Yeah.
I think just for the sake of time, making Grant the one that it's sort of more focused on made a lot of sense. And also giving him sort of a conflict and a journey to go through where he like didn't like kids at the beginning. Mm. Kind of. I don't know. What'd you think about his speech with the like snot-nosed kid at the very beginning that for some reason was at their archaeological dig? Do you remember this at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, that one was weird.
Where he like sort of terrifies a kid about a velociraptor, and it's like, what do you care, dude? Like,
it's just like kind of inappropriate, but also, what's this kid doing here?
Right. And okay, one of the changes that they made in the movie that I get, like, I kind of get that they had to do for the movie, was Grant seemed to know so much about the dinosaurs' behavior.
Mm.
Ah, you're an archaeologist. Part of the joy in the book of Grant going to Jurassic Park was he's like, oh my gosh, we could see how they behave. Like, look at this one. What about this? Oh, can the T-Rex not see you if you move? Why is it not attacking when they're not moving? And in the movie, he's just like, oh, the T-Rex can't see you if you don't move.
Right.
And it's like, how did you know that? Like, how... You're looking at bones, guy.
Right.
How would you have been so confident in that you would like advise them not to move when there's a T-Rex?
Yeah. There? I'm again kind of chalking that up to like time constraints though.
Yeah. And it didn't take me out of it. That's the thing. Is like,
yeah,
I'm still into it. Like he knows it because he's a dino expert. I don't need to know more. I'm assuming there's something about the bones that tells you this.
Sure. Yeah. Let's see, what else was different? I mean, so, well, what did you think about Jeff Goldblum as Malcolm?
I think it was a very good fit, honestly, but I think Jeff was too likable. I couldn't...
Yes, okay.
Yeah, go.
Here's the thing. I think they toned down Malcolm.
Yeah.
To some degree. I mean, he's still kind of a menace.
And he still has some of the same lines from the book. Like, he still delivers some similar lines. Yeah.
Right. He still does the... he still does the thing about scientists like getting their power too quickly or something, which again makes no sense.
Yeah. And he does the stupid water, the water thing with chaos theory. I get that part of it was
like
just
the worst example.
Well, and I think part of it, which to me honestly sold it more, is he was just trying to hold Dr. Sattler's hand.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, this is kind of like a good explanation that it doesn't have to make sense. The thing he's doing doesn't have to make sense because he's so obviously doing it to just like flirt with Dr. Sattler.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote it off. I was like, yeah, it's fine. It doesn't make sense. He's not trying to explain how chaos theory works.
Right. Yeah. I think that though the way that it did him worked quite well, because realistically, and we'll talk about this more in reviews, but Malcolm didn't need to be there. but I think that the character in the movie, like, actually does add stuff, because he's kind of just a character.
Yeah.
I mean an entertaining character.
Correct. Yeah. He's like kind of funny and silly, and yeah, he definitely adds something to it.
Yeah.
And while I do think you're not supposed to take him too seriously in the movie, I still think the movie presents him at the end as being like right in a major way.
Right.
And I'm like, that doesn't mean he was like prophetic about everything he was saying. He just happened to be right because it was.
I'm not even willing to say he was right. Okay.
I agree. I also loved the computer programmer, Dennis, I think was his name. Nedry.
Yeah, Nedry.
Nedry. Yeah, Nedry. I thought that actor was like, I thought the character was hilarious. The actor did an amazing job. Like, there's also an iconic scene with him at the Costa Rican restaurant, and he's like, nobody cares. Like,
yeah. That is a classic.
Classic scene. So good. I just like really loved that whole vibe.
We also didn't mention the classic scene the classic line of you were so focused on whether you could that you didn't
ask if you should. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But sorry, go ahead.
But yeah, I thought that character was really good. Honestly, I think the combining of the lawyer and the PR person into just one kind of sniveling guy, great. Good move there.
Right. Right. Although I will, I mean, this is a change of character, right? But I'm still pro lawyer guy in the book.
Lawyer guy in the book was reasonable, yeah. But the like change that they made to just mix him up into this one guy, I thought was very good, because like you don't empathize with him at all. He seems like really slimy from the very beginning, and when he gets eaten, it's like it kind of serves him right. It's not as tragic.
It's horrific
but not tragic. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. It's more comedic.
Yes, exactly.
I also thought it was interesting how they made Hammond more like reasonable,
yes, I
guess, and less negligent. And so like, actually, this kind of goes to a bigger point of, in the book, it's like, I'm gonna say the reason for the disaster is like 75% negligence.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Let's say 60% negligence, 40% sabotage by Nedry.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's like 80% sabotage.
Yeah.
20% negligence or something like that.
Right. Right.
Which I think, honestly, I think works better.
Yes, I agree. I think it makes the point that the book is trying to make, it makes it worse in the movie, because it's mostly the sabotage that causes it to fall apart. Whereas like the book is trying to talk about how it's inevitably going to happen, and it just happens to occur while they're there.
Okay,
Luke, there is a scene in the movie that every time I watch it, I wonder why it's there. And the scene is when Nedry is on the way to the boat and he gets lost and he gets out of the thing and he puts the cable around the tree and he encounters the dinosaurs that are going to attack him and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
When he does that, the filmmakers like Steven Spielberg shows the Barbasol can roll out of his pocket. And then as he's being eaten, the camera pans to the Barbasol can being covered up in mud and buried.
Right.
Why does he pan to the, like, the last thing we see when we leave Nedry is the can being covered in mud. Now, when I see it, my thought is like, oh, somebody could find that one day and dig it up. And like it's being buried. It's not just like forgotten. It's being buried to be like uncovered later.
And right. It does imply that like that's going to come into play at some point in the future.
Yeah. It's sort of foreshadowing a future thing. But like there's a bunch of dinosaurs still on the island. We don't need the can of Barbasol with the embryos in it because the dinos are already there. And in fact, they're breeding already. So.
Right. And also, it needs to be refrigerated.
Right. It has like 36 hours before it's no longer functional. I just it baffles me as a viewer of like, why did they put this in here?
Yeah. I feel like they maybe just like needed to pan away because they weren't going to show him being eaten.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
And like my other thing is like, okay, maybe they're burying it. I've thought about this a lot, Luke, if you haven't guessed.
Yeah, you're locked in on this.
My other thing is, Luke, maybe they're hiding it. Maybe it's not about it being buried and preserved for time, right? Because there's obviously a parallel there with like the amber, right? There's a parallel there with it being buried and potentially like fossilized for some future people to dig up and sort of recreate the thing later. But there's another component, which I think is like sort of thematically interesting, but like doesn't really make sense. Like, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for like what they're going for. Like, I don't understand what the point is. But the other thing is like, maybe they're trying to hide it, right? Like maybe somebody else is going to come around looking for the thing. And the fact that it's buried in mud means nobody's going to be able to find it when they look for it.
I see. But
nobody else is coming around looking for this thing. They don't even know it's got dinosaur embryos in it. So like, it doesn't.
Right.
That also doesn't matter. The scene has plagued me for years. If anybody out there has a good explanation for why Steven Spielberg pans to the Barbasol can as it's being buried in mud as that final shot, I'd love to hear more. Unless he's doing like a very bad setup for a sequel that just doesn't make sense based on the internal like science of the movie, where the like things are gonna die, they're gonna decompose because they're not refrigerated anymore. Anyway,
I love how concerned you are about this.
I gotta know.
Okay. Very good. The last thing that I have on the movie is this is, I think, kind of heavy-handed.
Yeah.
In a way that seems dumb, but I actually liked. At the very end, when the T-Rex comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, kind of saves them.
Yeah.
And they run out. And it, like, kind of turns and roars at the time when the banner comes down that says when dinosaurs ruled the Earth. I'm kind of into that scene, honestly.
I love it.
Even though it's kind of silly.
It's iconic. And
yeah,
it's a scene that I remember very vividly. And in the book, when they say it's an animatronic T-Rex in the lobby, I think the choice in the movie to make it a skeleton, like a dinosaur bone skeleton, is a lot more impactful for, if only that scene, to just like compare our like current understanding of dinosaurs to like what they actually were and how like dangerous this like natural thing is, and like this like contrast. It just was like, it really hits. That scene hits so hard. I love it. There is one more like scene in the movie that I love that I want to talk about, And that is when the T-Rex first shows up. This is something you can only do because, like, it's a movie. But when they show the, like, water rippling, that's, like, so perfect. Like, I think that that is just, like, such a amazing way to set the tension for what's going to happen. And then, so they do it at the first time with the cup of water where the T-Rex is coming up and we don't see it yet, but we just, like, see that it's a big thing approaching and the water's jiggling. And then the T-Rex attacks, and then later, when Malcolm is in the Jeep and Sattler and Muldoon are down looking for the kids and Grant, and he sees a T-Rex footprint filled with water and the ripples start to form in there too. Like, that scene is so good. Like, the cinematography of that scene, the, like, dread, the, like, anticipation, and him just, like, in the Jeep watching the ripples in this pool of water in the T-Rex footprint. Like, cinema, Luke.
This is true. The footsteps and the, like, the sound behind it also just kind of
Also, really, the score of this movie is so good. The John Williams did his thing. The score is really good. The sound design, great movie.
Okay. You want to wrap up with reviews?
We should wrap up with reviews, Luke.
Okay. Can I start?
Yeah.
We're going to do kind of combined reviews of both the book and the movie.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating how, like, after watching the movie, we kind of already knew the weaknesses of the book.
Yeah.
Without watching the movie.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting to see how, like, I guess Steven Spielberg and everyone else who made the movie, I feel like, had to have also been like, okay, this is a really great story with some very obvious weaknesses, because they fixed all of them.
We should say Michael Crichton did adapt it for, the screenplay was adapted by Michael Crichton. So he also worked on writing the movie.
Sure. Yes. Yes.
But continue.
But like, the failings of the book, like, okay, it's a really great story. It's very creative. Like, the concept behind of it is fun. And it's clearly, ruined is a strong word, but it's clearly, like, messed with by the just, like, personal beliefs of the author.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, as I kind of hinted earlier, Malcolm could be completely gone from this book and it would probably be better. Also, his desire to blame this on science, like, kind of makes it make no sense. Where, like, this would be a really good story and turns out to be one in the movie if it's just, like, a cool story about how something went wrong. And the book tries to make it about, like, a thing that was inevitable because of, like, how the world works. And that just, like, doesn't work, right? Because the chaos theory thing is, and how the chaos theory works with this story, just is not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that the movie leans more into it just being, like, a cool concept and everything goes wrong because of, like, these specific things. And they don't try to make it quite as much about, like human or like natural laws and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this your feeling on it as well?
Yeah, this is a rare instance where I think the movie did it better than the book did. Because I will say, I think the book was a very fun read. The book read a lot like a movie, honestly. Like, reading this book, I was like, this makes so much sense why they turned it into a movie, because it would be amazing to see this on the screen. Like, this would be an incredible movie. And I think something just that has to do with just the difference in the two mediums is, like, books do tend to give a lot more of the, like, philosophy, and they tend to get a little bit more into sort of the debate about stuff, right? Like, any book you read is going to have, like, especially something that's sort of more dramatic, is going to have, like, a bigger theme that they're arguing about in the book. And they're going to like explicitly argue about it at some point. At least I feel like that's a common sort of a thing in these types of books. And I think it does take away from the story a little bit, especially because we don't need... I think the chaos theory stuff took away from a lot of the book that you could have literally explained away as like antibiotic resistance is a way better analogy here of like, we try and, you know, find ways to contain life and it evolves and changes and tries to escape our sort of like constraints that we put on it and our attempts to control it. And that's quicker. It doesn't evoke chaos theory. And then I don't have to explain chaos theory to anyone.
Yeah. And, but even then that would be like, I agree with you that that would be a good, like kind of closing thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like as a small throwaway.
Correct. Correct.
Like paragraph.
And I think like the things that I think the movie that succeeded with the movie is they also didn't try and explain, like the book is also trying to get at this idea of automation as like trying to cut costs and automate things, but it doesn't really work in the sense that like in the movie, I think they explain it so well that this is going to make so much money that, I mean, there are just tons of staff in the movie.
Yeah.
Like they're everywhere. And they're like, yeah, they have technology helping them, but they also have a ton of people working there. Now, the thing in the movie that didn't make sense, it's like, why did everybody leave on the boat? Like,
I don't quite
understand why the staff suddenly all departed in the first half of the movie. But they didn't try and say that they needed to automate this extremely lucrative future business. And I think it actually lends to the scariness of it, right? The opening scene is like 30 guys trying to move one velociraptor. And they all have like cattle prods and guns. And it's like still it gets one and they can't control it. And it's terrifying because they can't control it even with all these people around and these like huge metal crates. And like I think they just did it better. I think they just like really distilled the parts of that book that were cool and fun into that movie. Like I said, it was a fun to read. It was a fun adventure book. But it was even more fun as like a 2-hour adventure movie in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but like, the chaos theory thing just does not fit. Just straight up does not work with the story.
I also agree. I think thematically it is not right here.
But it did, since it, I know they bring it up in the movie, but they don't make it like quite as big of a thing.
No.
So it doesn't bother me nearly as much.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, great movie.
Oh,
good idea for a book.
I do want to say, Luke, the one area that I think I preferred the book to the movie is in the book, it was way scarier when we learn that they're breeding.
Yeah.
And the way that they emphasize that is with the raptor count being 37 instead of 8. That moment was very good in the book. And in the movie, Grant comes across an egg nest and he's like, oh, they're breeding. That's cute. It's like, this is
right. He's a like huge hyped about
problem. And then of course you're only left with 3 velociraptors in the movie, but I imagine there's constraints of having 27 velociraptors at some point running around in your film. So,
right.
So I get that, but I just think that there's like a moment of horror when you realize how bad everything is, like apprehensive horror when you realize how bad everything is when they do the count and there's like way more velociraptors and they're all out in the park at that moment. It's like, oh no, things are about to go very badly.
Right.
So anyway, that is one area where I think the book did that a little bit better, but
sure,
otherwise I'm the movie's for me, Luke.
Spielberg, you've done it again.
Spielberg, you're a legend. Spielberg. Oh, Luke, I also have to say, nutritional yeast popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Did you get some?
We got some.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, he says.
Not my favorite popcorn topping.
Okay.
I like to go a little hot sauce.
Oh, you're a hot sauce popcorn guy. I do a little hot sauce. Okay. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, I'm glad you tried it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad we tried Jurassic Park, Luke.
That's right. That's right. And Dan, with Jurassic Park, you got me kind of in the mood for more classic books.
Mm, okay. What are you thinking? What are you thinking next, Luke?
So next week, we are going to read A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Le Guin.
Ursula K. Le Guin.
That's right.
Luke, I'm excited. I'm excited about this.
Yes. I've actually never read it.
Mm. She's one of my favorite science fiction authors, actually.
Yeah. But okay, so I think it's a fairly short book, so we're gonna try to get it in one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, we're gonna do it in one for the next episode. So let's check out Earthsea, Luke. Let's see what that's up to about. Let's see what there's to see.
There you go.
Okay. So yeah, Luke, we'll be back next week bringing the hot takes
and being dumb nerds.